They knocked on the door. They said trick or treat.
Yeah, they said trick or treat. And
you had treats.
Yes.
I was giving out candy all night, but I don't have to give them candy. They don't deserve candy, and I don't deserve this. Bald asshole? That's a hate crime. We're a sect. We're a group. You can't call us bald assholes. I wonder what if we were gay? There would be gay asshole? That's a hate crime.
But it says bald asshole. Yeah. It doesn't say really bald.
Okay, but we consider ourselves a group of people.
Sir, I'm bald. I'm not offended.
Well, with all due respect, Officer Burt, you are not bald, okay? You have chosen to shave your hair. That's a look that you're cultivating to be fashionable, and we don't really consider you part of the bald community, with all due respect.
Did they threaten you in any way? Did you see weapons of any kind?
No, there was no threat except for the trick threat.
What's the trick threat?
Well, the trick or treat. No treat, trick. It's a threat. How far can you take these tricks?
It was any other night, sir.
Trick or treat, bang, bang.
But it's trick or treat.
Halloween.
We cut the kids a little slack on Halloween. Yeah. There's kind of a social contract that you enter when you open that door. They say a trick or treat. I would advise you give the treat.
Why don't you just give me any next time, Larry?
I will not be intimidated, even on Halloween.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, I didn't realize that was the intro. I thought we were just enjoying it.
High Effort Energy Podcast.
Hi. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to our low effort, low quality podcast. I was not in on this bit.
Those are my three sound effects that I have on mine.
Nice.
Thank you.
Very nice. We come to you from a chilly basement that smells a lot less like piss than it once did.
I cleaned the box today.
Yeah, thank you very much. You're
welcome.
That's nice.
I do it once a week.
This, you know, they're very lucky cats, but of course they kind of hold us hostage on that, because if the box isn't clean, the cat will shit on the floor, which is just great. It's awesome. Love being held hostage by a cat.
Well, you know, on the other hand, keeps you disciplined. Keeps you disciplined.
Yeah, last thing I want out of a pet is me being disciplined.
Nadio. Grab bag.
$100,000 a year that is deeply unhappy should quit and garage sale 52 weeks a year. Goodwill, garage sales, eBay, easy 100,000. I have
some advice for you. Some financial advice for you.
Wow, that's helpful. Mm-hmm.
Two Trump town hall clips for you.
All right.
Well, one's a town hall. One is a memorial to October 7th.
Okay.
Which one should I begin with?
The first one.
He was at this town hall and he seemed to just kind of get bored at one point.
Let's not do any more questions. Let's just listen to music. Let's make it into a music. Who the hell wants to hear questions, right? Isn't that beautiful, though? Go and vote. Let me hear that music, please.
Everyone, let's thank President Trump.
Nice and loud.
God bless you.
He stood and listened to music for 30 minutes.
Okay. You know, he's got a point. Who the fuck wants to listen to him answer questions?
People started filing out. There was confusion. It's one of the more interesting feats of comedy we've seen. I feel like very Andy Kaufman.
We could do another question.
It is like an Andy Kaufman bit. Yeah. It's very strange. What do you think's going on there? You think he's just sick of it? Tired of this shit?
Maybe he's exhausted.
Tired of the campaigning, really probably tired of being in politics on some level.
This one I feel like flew under the radar. He went to the October 7th memorial event with Jewish leaders in Miami.
Okay.
And he finished it this way, which I don't know if it's respectful or not.
I'll let you know.
We're mostly listening for how, you know, he walks off.
Yeah, okay.
I'm going to turn this, and you can never say a total positive because all of those people that have died, but we're going to turn this into something where they can be proud of what's happened. They can say, we sacrificed our lives for something very special. There has to be unity. There has to be peace. There has to be strength. We need so many qualities. We need every single quality. We're going to bring it all together.
We need all the qualities.
Will have peace in the Middle East. We will have strength and resilience, and we will have a very powerful and strong Israel. And I will be with you all the way. Thank you very much. God bless you. And God bless the people of Israel. God bless America. Thank you very much.
All right. Solemn event, October 7th. Oh, I don't know. Oh, that's... that's not really funny. People died. It was a terrorist attack.
Let's go.
All right, let's go. Hell yeah. All right. Yeah. Here we go. Let's start filing off. Now look, let's see what he does. Let's see if he... You know the patented YMCA Donald Trump dance, don't you?
No.
You're not aware with it?
No, I'm not.
You know this one?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, that's like the white man dance in general.
Mm-hmm. Here he goes. All right. Clap, 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 clap. Thank you, guys. Someone's got his yarmulke off, like tipping a cap. Questionable. All right. Here he goes. Yeah. All right. So many people died, though, yeah. So it's very sad.
It's, you know, but we're making the best of it now, and they sacrificed their lives for something beautiful.
All the qualities. We're going to have so many qualities.
What does that mean? The people who were killed on October 7th sacrificed their lives for what?
Well, for the, you know, a lasting peace. A lasting peace.
Like, it was worth it that they died because now we get to annex Gaza. Is that the implication?
It is a maybe. Yeah, it's a little. Maybe he's also just talking about people dying in the war. The Israeli soldiers, you know, who are fighting. That's usually who you would
say sacrificed their lives.
Point to, but them. I guess you would say sort of like, oh, they didn't, you know, the October 7th victims didn't die in vain, you know, that the...
They didn't die in vain, again, because of what?
Well, you know, after all said and done, you know, there would be net benefits for Israel.
I don't think that tracks.
Well, you know, we'll have to wait to see.
The language of sacrifice here and vanity being in vain or not. These questions, I think, whatever.
Struggling.
It's in there. The thought is in there. Yeah. But whatever. I need to, you know.
Too much of the reefer. Kamala Harris, I had been asking, I don't know if you, because we haven't podcast for a while.
Yeah, no, the people were mean to me, so I didn't want to podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, you guys got to be careful with Liz.
Shut up.
It's sort of the same thing with her going off Twitter or whatever.
I know.
I've been demanding for, I would say, at least 6 weeks that Kamala Harris publish an agenda for black men.
Mm-hmm.
Remember? I would email every day. Kamala@KamalaHarris.com.
Yeah, of course.
It's actually Kamala. I don't know why you keep saying it the other way. And I'm like, look, I don't know if I can vote for you unless we get a black agenda.
Yeah.
Specifically for black men, though. No black women are fine. They're chill. They don't need help. But black men in particular. This is a whole thing. I don't know if you've seen this, right?
I heard about it.
Yeah, like Obama was accusing black male Trump supporters of hating women. Remember, did you see that? He was kind of lecturing them. And
yeah, I saw that.
It's a whole thing. Everyone's freaking out about black men voting for Trump. Of course, the vast, we're talking like 10%, 15% of them. But still, you know, it's a thing. It's interesting because it does seem like, are we setting up for it's black men's fault if Kamala doesn't win?
That's a new one.
That'd be interesting. They tried that a little bit for gay marriage. Remember that?
Yeah, I remember that.
And then it didn't really go. Anyways, she listened to me.
Okay, so now we've got an agenda for black men from Kamala Harris.
Yes, an opportunity agenda for black men in particular.
Kamala.
Yeah, it's rough. Providing 1 million loans that are fully forgivable to black entrepreneurs and others to start a business. So here's the kind of funny thing when you read all these agendas for specific races is that it's not actually legal to have programs that are only for a specific race.
Because yeah, okay.
There's a constitution, you know?
Yeah.
14th Amendment, yeah, sort of thing.
I'm aware of that.
So it's always like a tricky kind of like, okay, so you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so we get 1 million fully forgivable loans to black entrepreneurs and others. So it's like, okay, so this is just small business loans.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Some small business owners are black.
You know, so you see how it's actually...
It's kind of a black thing.
Yeah.
Think about it.
You know, it's like if we did something for every internet user, some of them would be black. So you would have to characterize it as part of your agenda for black people.
And I mean, it's kind of unfair, you know what I mean? Because like you can't do a pro, but it's like, what are we doing? Okay. That's not the point of this. We're going to get to it. Okay.
Okay.
Number two. Championing education, training, and mentorship programs that help black men get good paying jobs in high demanding industries and lead their communities, including pathways to become teachers. So that's presumably for everyone. Launch a national health equity initiative focused on black men that addresses sickle cell disease, diabetes, mental health, prostate cancer, and other health challenges that disproportionately impact them. Now, if you'd had a program that was just for sickle cell, you know,
yeah,
then maybe you've got something.
Yeah.
But as I understand, women also, right? Get sickle cell.
Yeah, well, everybody can get sickle cell anemia.
Legalizing recreational marijuana.
I mean, it's much more common in particular racial and ethnic groups, but anyone, theoretically.
Creating opportunities for black Americans to succeed in this new industry. So my agenda for black men is to legalize weed. Finally.
Oh, okay.
Support a regulatory framework for cryptocurrency and other digital assets so black men who invest and own these assets are protected.
Okay. Yeah, all right.
Okay.
See, she's really been thinking long and hard about this, and she's putting the best plan out there. You know what this reminds me of? It gives me flashbacks to Elizabeth Warren.
Kind of, yeah. It's dumber than that, though.
Yeah, it's dumber and more poorly done.
It's somehow, yeah, dumber and like more offensive. Warren wouldn't put this out because it would be depicted as racist.
Yes.
They'd be like, Elizabeth Warren is racist. She was like, oh, a black men agenda. Don't black men love crypto? Like, no, I don't. Let's not. I don't know. I don't think so. It's just like, crypto's a scam, right?
Yeah.
So like, we're in this. Are we going to turn this page? Like, how long do we prop up this scam? We got to keep these assets going. People paid a lot of money for them and they don't like do anything, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and what about like my Bored Ape NFT? Where's my bailout? I spent $150,000 on my Bored Ape and I can't even sell it, you know, for $50.
Yeah.
Where's my bailout, Obama? You know, other digital assets, you know, so like the, what did they have? The NBA had like, you could own a clip of a highlight of like someone dunking a ball or something in a game.
Yeah.
Like you would own it.
Yeah.
What was that called? Hot shot or something?
I mean, I'm saying, yeah, but I have no idea what you're talking about.
It was the most ridiculous thing. NBA NFTs, Top Shot, NBA Top Shot. They still have it apparently. And it was like NFTs and they're trying to make it, they're kind of being like, these are like digital trading cards.
Oh, okay.
But you would own like a clip of like Anthony Edwards dunking over someone.
Yeah.
But you're like, but this clip's also just on YouTube.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, but you own a token that says that it's your clip. And then you could sell that token to someone else. And it just was fucking crazy.
Yeah.
And people bought that shit and never made any sense anyways. I guess they're still doing it.
Yeah. Wow. She really put legalizing weed on there?
Legalizing weed and protecting cryptocurrency and other digital assets, like NFTs, I guess.
Okay.
So.
Well.
That's, you know, for the black community.
Yeah. That's, you know, I feel like I can't comment, honestly. Because
I
is,
can.
It is kind of so racist.
It would seem that way.
It feels a little radioactive, except that it's coming from her. Like, I wouldn't want to interact with that piece of text in any way in public.
Listen to this elaboration here. More than 20% of black Americans own or have owned cryptocurrency assets. Already have owned. Like, what are we doing here? Why do I care about someone who has owned one?
You know.
If they don't currently. I really want to know, what's the current ownership situation like? You know what I mean?
Yes.
Why am I trying to protect someone who doesn't even own the Bored Ape anymore?
Yeah.
Like, they're fine. They got out. I don't know what, but okay. Vice President Harris appreciates the ways in which new technologies can broaden access to banking and financial services. So that's the bit here.
Okay.
Cryptos and NFTs has broadened access to banking and financial services. To who? To criminals? To drug dealers?
U.S. banks are, you know, historically racist institutions. So if you want to completely divorce yourself from anything ever touched by racism, then you got to go with crypto. It's the purest option, really. Everybody's obligated to do it now that we know what we know.
She has other stuff too that's not on her list, but here we go. Providing financial support to financially stressed farmers and ranchers, including black farmers and ranchers.
Okay. That's important. How many?
Is that a big black industry?
I don't. Is this okay for us to pose this question? the whole thing is kind of.
It's out there. I mean, we have to be able to have discourse on it.
I mean, we have to be able to have discourse, but sometimes you're completely entitled to a discourse, but you can still be hanged for it.
Harris, the whole thing, I know we're all pro Harris and whatever, but like, it's just like, it's such a train wreck. Like, she doesn't really believe anything.
No, yeah, there's no platform or anything.
And we don't realize how spoiled we were there for in 2016 and then especially 2020. When we had policy wars. Yeah. I mean, I guess because we didn't have a primary, right?
Yeah.
So she's just thrust on there. And like, no one gets to be like, this is dumb. It lacks competition. This is, this is where that we have a monopoly on on the Democratic nominee. We needed more competition to help make this go. But
yeah.
Anyway, it's like you said, what if I pitched the New York Times? I was like, that NLRB piece went great. I got a new one. My views on the Harris Black agenda. Okay.
You should be like, I actually minored in Black studies.
I do actually have them. I am a credentialed expert.
Yeah. You've published important articles. So
I am published in the American Philosophical Association newsletter on philosophy and the Black experience. What do you think about that?
There you go. I'm saying write that email.
It's legit.
You should, the Brunig take on Kamala Harris' plan for black men. And you should play it completely straight.
Yeah. No. Yeah, just run it through and just be like, I don't know. On the one hand, if we prop up the crypto stuff, it could cause more black people to be scammed. like everyone who is buys crypto of any race is being scammed, you know?
Yeah.
Could go that route. But the policy releases on this shit has really been something else. But what can you do? Like, they just got you over a barrel. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
People are like, are you going to write about it? I'm like, write about what, dude? What do you want me? What am I, you know? What? Write what exactly?
How do you feel like the election's going to go?
What's the latest?
Isn't she falling off in the polls?
In the betting market, she's been falling off.
Jesus.
Who's ahead in the polls? The national polls, 538, which is no longer Nate Silver.
Okay.
So, if that was your bit, you like Nate Silver. That's not it anymore. Has her up by 28. Has her up by 2.4 points nationally. But what's the, like, don't they do, like, percentage likelihood of winning and all that kind of shit? Likelihood of winning. But yeah, I don't know. Oh, here we go. Who is favored to win? They've got Harris at 54%, Trump at 46%. So.
Okay.
It's a toss-up.
This one's a squeaker, Mr. M, as is said in Election.
Okay.
Yeah, in case you've seen that movie.
I have seen it. You showed it to me.
Oh, yeah. What did you think?
Very spicy.
Yeah, I guess that's very one of the qualities.
Titillating.
The movie definitely has a dirty mind, but it has some valid observations, I think.
It's more of a smut movie, I would say.
I wouldn't describe Election that way. You know, certainly part of it.
You said you're going to show me a tweet.
Oh, yeah. It's this very toxic tweet. Let me pull it up.
Shall I play some music?
Okay. I want you to just read the post and then read the quote tweet, okay?
I'm just doing this again.
Yeah.
After what happened last time.
I know. Just this tweet itself is great.
I have not been following this.
No, okay? Nor have I.
You have, 100%. You subscribe to 8. Olivia Newsy,
so not true.
And you compare them and you have your own private Wikipedia.
I get
Wikipedia.
News from people that I know in the industry.
I feel like I should follow. It's the Diddy thing as well. I feel like I should be following, but I'm just like, God, this is a lot.
Yeah,
this
he got
avalanche
sued so many times.
Of material. Well, yeah, sued. I mean, he's been arrested.
No, but I mean, there are so many allegations because many people filed lawsuits.
Sure, yeah. Olivia Newsy said RFK Jr. wanted to possess and impregnate her during sexting tryst, her ex claims. And then Keith Olbermann says same.
With the shruggy emoji.
But also, I get that.
It's very confusing.
Yeah, no, I get the Keith Olbermann bit. He's like, I also want to fuck her or whatever,
but
right?
It's actually what he's saying is formally confusing.
Yeah, Olivia Newsy. This is a New York Post tweet, okay? Yeah. So they put this together. It's apparently headline. Olivia Newsy said RFK Jr. wanted to possess and impregnate her. Okay, she said it. During sexting tryst?
Mm-hmm.
So did she say it in the sexting? Or is she saying, she didn't say, it doesn't say Olivia Newsy said RFK Jr. said.
Yes.
It just says Olivia Newsy said RFK Jr. wanted.
Yes.
So I guess, I mean, like, let's clean it all up, right? Presumably, she said that he texted her this. I don't know why I always say tweeting, texting. That he texted her this.
The other layer is, it's Ryan Lizza's lawsuit that is claiming that Olivia Newsy said this.
Do I need to read this complaint?
RFK Jr.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want
to her,
some,
to him.
Some gory details, but, you know.
Now, I feel like slightly Liz vindicated on this, because after the last episode, where I had the correct opinion and you had the incorrect opinion.
Correct.
I don't even remember what I said, but
I don't remember either.
She filed a lawsuit saying that she was being, what was it? She filed a lawsuit against Ryan Lizza saying that he had,
domestically abused her.
Abused her in various ways.
Yeah.
So, allegedly.
Allegedly, but you know.
If that turns out to be true, that's not great.
She got an order of protection against him.
How hard is it to get one of those?
I mean, remember when I had to do it? It was kind of a pain in the ass.
It was a paperwork hassle. Yeah. I have actually seen a judge when I was doing unemployment benefit appeals in Massachusetts State District Court.
Yeah.
I had to sit in and watch just the fucking proceedings for a day.
Yeah.
Where someone comes up and they have a ticket and someone comes and someone was trying to get a restraining order and the judge was like, nope.
Okay.
And then she was crying and stuff.
Yeah.
It's like, damn.
Yeah.
That's rough.
Yeah.
She seems really torn up about this. Maybe just, you know, give her one. And I mean, what's the harm? Just basically just saying this guy can't come within a certain distance of her. I don't know. But, you know, hey. The man was applying the law as he sees it.
You know, it's rough. Somebody's got to make the tough calls.
If we're going to do tweets, as many people know, Noah Smith, formerly an econ blogger, has in the last couple of years
I'm sorry.
Fully lost his mind.
I just wanted to add that another read you can have on that tweet is that Keith Olbermann is saying RFK Jr. texted him. He wanted to possess and impregnate him, which is what I found really funny.
Keith really, I even just lost track of that because the headline lost my mind. And I mean, what are we doing?
Keith Olbermann he's weirdly a part of this story, but his role has been so inexplicable and just bizarre.
He's 65 years old. Why are we tweeting like this?
He's tweeted about her several times since this happened.
It just seems very disrespectful, you know?
Yeah, no, especially knowing what's going on with her right
now.
Yeah,
this is a whole thing here with the abuse and whatever, and he's just like, yeah. And then also, what's being said is a little questionable. Yeah, possess? I guess impregnate. I don't know. Can you say that? That's I guess not as bad. I don't really know.
No, these are those are normal sentiments.
Yeah.
Those are just normal sentiments. That's not strange? Lovers want to possess each other.
I guess it depends. Yeah, I guess if you think of it as, I don't know. Maybe I'm off the fucking, I'm off on. next tweet.
Yes, next tweet.
Like I said, everyone knows Noah Smith's kind of lost his mind the last couple of years.
Doesn't he hate China now?
Oh my god, he's China. He used to be a guy who was effective marginal tax rates and industrial policy, and now he's China must die. Fuck the Chinese. And he also was real keyed up on the Israel stuff. And he got in a rough position because he was one of those people who came out on day one and was real heated about October 7th. And then when there was left wing pushback, he kind of lost his mind and became sort of reverse polarized by it. So now he can't possibly come back. He's one of those people, right? If you are quiet during that period, you kind of still have room to maneuver.
Yeah.
But if you got way out there and people were telling you, no, Israel's bad, they're doing bad stuff too, whatever, and you were like, you're insane, you're anti-Semitic, whatever, and then Israel proceeded to do what it's done.
Yeah.
And now you're kind of sitting there just like... But one way to deal with that, mm-hmm. and this is true in general, whenever you find yourself in an impossible situation because you unfortunately picked the wrong side of a dispute, which by the way, I would recommend just holding back a little bit because you don't really know what other state actors are going to do. This is the left has had this problem as well historically where they'll jump in and be like, I love, and it'd be like some random, you know, leader in South America, you know, yeah. And then that guy like does a bunch of fucked up shit, you know.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Maybe just don't attach yourself to like a personality. Maybe just attach yourself to specific ideas and programs and policies, you know. And you can say, oh, when he did that, that was good. That was a good policy. And then you don't have to get too hung up with who knows what the fuck some random dude in another country is going to do, you know.
Yeah.
That's a little advice from Matt.
A little pro tip here.
Same for like states in wars, right? I just wouldn't really get going on any of that, because how often does anyone engage in war without tremendous atrocity? But anyways, when you find yourself in that situation, one thing you can do is just constantly nitpick fact claims.
Yeah, of course.
Right? Because instead of like ever dealing with like the totality of the military campaign in Gaza, someone might make a claim that's like, oh, they targeted a hospital. And you'd be like, that's fucking wrong.
Yeah.
You're wrong. And you could like go all in. You know what I mean? Like spend all this time on it or whatever, which they did. And now, of course, I don't know, more recently, they've acknowledged that they were targeting hospitals. But that's a thing you could do, mm-hmm. right? Nitpick the facts.
Mm-hmm.
So the New York Times had a pretty wild piece a few days ago. Where they had all of these medical professionals that were in Gaza.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, and they were saying that these kids were being shot,
yeah,
you know, on purpose and sometimes at point blank and whatever, right?
Yeah, that seems correct.
65 doctors, nurses, and paramedics, what we saw in Gaza. There was like a data element to it as well, which was interesting. Like they asked them specific questions.
Yeah.
And then like, how many of you saw this? And it was interesting. But like, that's a lot. That's a pretty legit sample, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we've got 65 of these people are lying, you know? Like, I don't know. It seems unlikely.
Well, you know, the allegation is going to be that these are all radical Palestinian supporters, and that's why they went and served over there.
Yeah, I mean, I guess.
And,
but
you know, they were already predisposed to try to portray Israel as bad. I mean, that's going to be the claim, and you have to litigate it, and it's going to be so fucking
right.
irritating.
So here we go. But is that all we have? Is that all we have? So this person, Emily Schrader, was like, this is bullshit. This is I've debunked this and whatever, right? Yeah. And
well, what's her story? Who the hell is that?
I don't know. She works for some TV channel. But she's like, these are the X rates that purport to show children were treated after being shot by the IDF with what they claim is 5, you know, caliber bullets. Yet there's no skull fractures, no exit wounds, and no change in the bullet. You know, so she's a fucking ballistics expert, turns out. And then Noah Smith jumps on that.
Okay.
Always a mistake.
Yeah.
Oh, who's this random person? You know, works for like an Israeli TV channel.
Yeah. Off to a rough start there.
And he goes, Israel does enough bad stuff that the Palestine people don't need to lie, and yet they do lie all the time about everything. These are not, you know, all Palestinians. These are doctors, whatever.
Yeah.
Anyways. So, you know, somehow the New York Times missed it. They just didn't cover this. It was, you know, way off the mark, whatever. Okay.
Yeah.
And this got so kind of heated that, you know, this is what happened. Bunch of people jumped on. Oh, this is not right. This is not right. This is not right. You know, these were all U.S. health professionals.
Yeah, of course.
Not Palestinians. Okay. And so it got so heated where people were, you know, all of a sudden ballistics experts looking at these x-rays of the children with bullets in their head and being like, nah, that ain't it. That wasn't what happened there. That the New York Times put out a press release.
Shouldn't have done that.
And said, look, we presented the scans to a new round of multiple independent experts in gunshot wounds, radiology, and pediatric trauma who attested to the image's credibility. In addition, we examined the image's metadata and compared the images to video footage of their corresponding CT scans as well as photographs of the wounds of the three young children. While our editors have photographs to corroborate the CT scan images, because of their graphic nature, we decided these photos of children with gunshot wounds to the head or neck were too horrific for publication. We made a similar decision for the additional 40-plus photographs and videos supplied by the doctors and nurses surveyed that depicted young children with similar gunshot wounds. So,
I think as a general matter,
whoops,
they shouldn't explain themselves. You know, you shouldn't have to respond to people freaking out on social media just because people are freaking out on social media.
No.
However, in this case, the whatever you want to call it, it's not a correction. It's just,
it's a press release.
The presser or whatever seems to have added new information to the record.
It did, yeah.
Which is wild. Why wasn't that in the report?
Yeah, they could have included a paragraph that just said, look, we've also, you know, there's all these other photos we've also seen. I guess, you know, I mean, this is the thing in general. And the lying liberal media, you
it's
know.
It's true, yeah.
They have a bent, you know, and you can't lose track of their bent.
True.
Now, it's not lefty, let's be honest.
No, it's liberal.
But you got to be... I don't know. Maybe this is just like, I feel like I've been around it enough and we're close enough to it that I'm like pretty discerning about these things.
Yeah.
You got to know how the sausage, I guess once you know well enough how this is done, you got to realize you got to be careful being like, well, the story doesn't say this because you know there's a whole bunch of shit that happens that's not in the story.
Yeah.
There's so much shit where people are double checking and doing all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, all the verification and the vetting of substance.
And especially something like this.
Yeah.
So if you're like, oh, all they have is three images, I don't think so. Probably they got more than that. You know what I mean? But like, you just at least need to know that, I guess if they're making a bold fact claim like this and you look at it and you're like, it seems kind of thin. They probably got a bunch of other shit that they just didn't put in there.
Yeah.
And because that wasn't the point of the piece. The point of the piece wasn't to demonstrate, to produce all the documents that generate the conclusion. It's not a fucking trial.
Yeah.
Right? It's, look, we have evaluated this. We can be confident this is a fact. And that's going to, you know, form a tent pole of the story, which is about a whole number of other things, you know?
Yeah.
So, anyways, be careful on that. Of course, no retraction, it seems like, from
Noah
Smith. Smith. I mean, yeah, he's not like, whoops.
Yeah, going to be like, damn, I hope they don't bully the New York Times.
No, they're obviously not going to retract it. They said we're like, you know, but.
Look, just because the New York Times is completely in the right doesn't mean they're going to do.
These days they're
completely right there.
They've reformed a little bit, I think.
Yeah, there was what do you call it?
Newspaper. Magazine.
Definitely all of those things. There was a Counter-Reformation.
Oh, all right.
That's what happened.
All right.
They're involved in a dialectical here.
Yeah, I mean, they really are, actually. As funny as it sounds, but...
I love the dialectic.
All right, I got a couple of little tidbits.
What's your tidbits? Personally, I think one of the great tidbits of our current situation is that Matt's just in various ways by life just completely beaten down at this point.
It does seem more acute than it once was.
Matt's just lying completely dead on the ground.
The kids have reached this inflection point where they're old enough to start being dickheads. I mean, you know, in a way that's more intentional than just like a tantrum throwing. You know what I mean? Kind of like, I don't really care for that, you know?
Yeah, they'd be hurtful.
Like, and it's thoughtful.
Yeah.
It's thought out. You're like, I don't really know what to do with this. Like, at least when you just kind of act kind of reflexively.
Yeah.
You're like, dumbass kid can't control themselves.
Yeah.
But when they're like calculatedly misbehaving, then you're sort of like, it's a different question. Tougher to deal with. But
yeah.
When I took them to their physicals, I thought this was funny. Just kind of curious. Are you allowed to do this? Is this something you're allowed to do socially?
Talking about your kids?
They had a doctor.
This is like all people do socially.
Let me get to what I was going to say.
Okay, sorry.
They had a doctor look at them, and the doctor was asking them questions and stuff. And they were like, oh, we like mom more than dad. And she's like, why? And they're like, because, and this is all Jane. She's like, I know how to break mom down and get candy. And then the doctor was like, oh, okay, so mom's good cop, dad's bad cop, or whatever, right? Uh-huh. And Jane was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then the doctor looks at her and she goes, usually it's the other way around. And she goes, or maybe that's just because I'm the doctor at our house. I don't know. Oh, well, you don't need to be hashing out your marital issue.
I don't,
in front of the children.
Yeah, it's not the role she's serving in your life. That's rough.
She seemed fine. She had running shoes on.
Okay. Well, you know, the female doctors, a lot of allowances are made for them in terms of fashion.
They love fitness.
Yeah.
They love to be fit.
It's interesting. I typically think of doctors as having, you know, either very athletic shoes or bad shoes, just because they're, you know, orthopedic frequently, because these people are on their feet all day.
Mm-hmm.
But I did have a doctor one time, the OB-GYN that Kaiser gave me in DC. This was just the first person who happened to have an opening at the Kaiser Permanente mothership when I got pregnant.
Mm.
At the time, I didn't believe you at all about Kaiser. I thought it was going to suck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you didn't believe the hype.
I didn't.
Well, I would say in the hype, but you were...
The hype of you. You generated
my hype. Yeah, you were like, I don't know. This seems like kind of a low rent HMO type thing. I'm like, nah. What you don't understand is what sucks about the medical system is all the fucking hassle.
Yeah, you know, you're like a single payer, single provider. Just take the hassle out, man. Yeah, I see the wisdom now.
Oh, you saw it.
But, I went to this appointment. I mean, I contacted my general practitioner at Kaiser and was like, I'm pregnant. What do I do? On the internet, they just made me immediately an appointment with an OB-GYN.
They're like, yeah, we got a whole stable of one. Boop, boop, done. Yeah,
exactly. And I went in and saw her, and she was this extremely glamorous young woman. And like always said the exact right things, was very much up on the latest research, and always just looked fabulous, even though she was in scrubs and stuff. She had great shoes. She had great jewelry. She had great hair. It was just incredible.
Mm-hmm.
It was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so glamorous.
Stylish doctors work at Kaiser.
I mean, at least one stylish doctor did. And she was very pretty. You know, so I'm like, you're a doctor. You're smart. You're pretty. You seem happy.
Yeah, she was cheerful.
What else, you know, could a person possibly ask to be?
Yeah. Nowadays, we get such a pain in the ass.
I don't even have an OB-GYN I like here.
I went to the doctor, and I did the physical, and they're like, oh, you have a hole in your ear.
Oh, shit.
You need to go get that done. I'm like, oh, well, what do I do there? And they're like, oh, this was one where they do. It was like kind of like an integrated thing, whatever, yeah. Sort of. But they're like, oh, you have to drive to another fucking town.
Okay.
Oh, my God. In D.C., they would just be like, go to 4-4 and just tell, you know, when you get there, they'll know you're coming.
Yeah.
And whatever the next doctor is, will look at your fucking ear. You don't even have to go home. This one's like, oh, a week later, you just get, you know what I mean?
No, yeah.
They're just like, nah, just go now. Go get it done.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, they would give you a flu shot if they saw you for any reason.
Yeah, I like the big medical center approach to things. Anyways, I thought that was curious.
Yeah, very curious.
The other tidbit, which this happened a while ago, and
oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, I've been interrupting you.
It's okay.
Jane is absolutely correct in what she was saying to the doctor. And that she can just psychologically break me down until I essentially cooperate with whatever she wants.
Yeah, one of the interesting things, and I really am puzzled by this, and I don't know if I'm weird or what's going on, but when a child cries in an effort to get something from me, when my children cry, I don't know, I've never had another child do it, what it does is it makes me not want to do it. Like, just makes me really not want to do it. And then I don't.
Is this only when the child is crying frivolously?
Yeah. No, look, if you're hurt or something.
Yeah.
Then, you know, sympathy there. But if you want some bullshit, you know, some item at a, you know, everywhere you go, any child event, they're you know, they're smart enough now. They put shit that you know, kids want to buy at it.
Yeah.
And I don't buy, you know. Sometimes I will, but most of the time I won't, because
yeah.
I would, you know, basically, like, every time you go somewhere, you have to spend like $40 just to, you know, get them some garbage. I am so baffled by this, and I have this conversation with him almost every day where I'm like, look, whenever you want something and you think I'm not getting it for you or whatever, and then you cry about it. It's not literally tears. It could be any kind of whining or any of that shit. Does it ever work? And Jane will be like, no, it never does. She goes, but it does work with mom. It does work with Nana and Papa. I'm like, okay. So you know intellectually. Because I didn't have to like prod you. You know intellectually it doesn't work for me. And yet you keep attempting this. You have attempted this well over 1,000 times in your life. And as far as I can tell, it's never succeeded. You know, or very rarely. And yet you keep doing it. And I'm like, I don't understand how children evolved, how humans evolved to have offspring that ask for things in a way that makes me not want to give it to them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That seems maladaptive.
Yeah.
It makes me really not want, like, it makes me even want to, like, find other stuff not to give them that I was already going to give them.
No.
Because I'm like, I don't ask me like that. That it triggers my brain. Like, and it reminds me actually in other contexts, and maybe this is just like different people are different on this.
Yeah.
Because this happens, I think about this in like, I don't know, like a labor law context. Well, you'll run into some workers who, there's this idea, let's put it this way, that the way to get someone to do something is to just make it really hard on them if they don't.
Yeah.
And that kind of, you know, you see the rational element of that, like, well, people don't like it when hard things happen to them, so they'll just do whatever it takes to avoid that, right?
Right.
So, you know, people won't involve themselves in like labor actions or unionization because they don't want to get fired.
Yeah.
Or whatever. But then you also find people, and this may be the dominant tendency, where they don't like to be coerced into doing things.
Yeah.
So if the way that you're trying to get them to do it is in a coercive, heavy-handed way, they find that itself so offensive that even if they might have been inclined to just go along with what you want to do, now they're not going to because of the way that you approached it. Even though the way you approached it in theory makes it more advantageous for them to do it.
Yes.
Because you're coming down hard and you're making it really clear that if they don't do it, you're going to punish them. But that kind of threat doesn't work. That threat triggers the opposite response.
Yeah.
And makes them go, fuck you. No one threatens me. Fuck that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's literally how I feel with the children. I'm like, I may have even gotten you this ice cream if you hadn't just been so whiny about it, you know?
Yeah.
Because no one, you know, didn't threaten me with some fit and crying. That's not how things are going to go.
Yeah. I mean, as a substantial issue, you want the kid to not feel like they're just completely in control of you because they need you to provide.
Well, so that's what it sounds like. When you read people talk about it, it's like I have to I have to overcome my natural desire to give in.
Yeah.
Because I need to make it clear, you know, that they can't do this, right? So it's like I need, it's like a very conscious, intentional strategy.
Yeah.
I'm saying totally reflexively, I'm like, I don't want to do this, period. Like, it's going to be real hard to get me to do it now because of the way you approached it. But then I think, like, that can't be good for children, their long-term survival. their strategy for resource acquisition is completely ineffective. It's counterproductive, in fact. They get less resources than they would get if they didn't cry so much.
Yeah. I mean, your position on this, I believe, is just.
I just don't get, I need an evolutionary psychologist to explain to me why children have evolved in this maladaptive way.
Maybe your science can't explain everything. Augustine says that children are full of evil from the time they're born. What about that explanation?
You know, I mean,
maybe there's no evolutionary rule and they're just full of sin.
Yeah.
You know, they do some evil shit. You got to admit that. They like torture each other.
Oh, yeah. Now, when they get bored, especially, that's crazy. I didn't realize that when I didn't realize one of the things that children would do when they get bored is just start beating the shit out of each other.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, they're just like, man, I've been waiting in line for 30 minutes, waiting for this fucking train ride. I'm getting real tired. There's no entertainment. What if I just picked my sister up and slammed her on the ground? Which is something Jane has done before. And you're like, why did you do that? She's like, because, you know, she gets some bullshit.
She hit me 3 days ago.
She was annoying me. She was repeating something. But.
Yeah.
On that note, I have an interesting story.
Okay, hit me.
That I'd intended to share a while ago, and we tried to, and that podcast actually blew up on us. But Jane, so I think I've described this before, but Jane is, the way the soccer is organized up here, as far as I can tell, is because we have all these little towns, right? There's all these, like, Arne's not, like, super small, but especially outside of Stanford, a lot of them are pretty small.
Yeah.
The, like, youth sports, at least the soccer's organized within each municipality.
Okay.
And you have, like, a rec league in that municipality for the various ages and genders and whatever, right? So there's, like, an 8-year-old girls rec league, or it would be, like, under 9, right? Or under 10 or under 11 or something like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then in that rec league, they will also select ostensibly the top, in her case, 12 players in that grouping, and they become like the quote unquote travel team, which just means they play the surrounding towns, like the ones that are like 10 minutes away.
Yeah. You know?
And then the other towns do the same thing. So, like, for girls soccer within Jane's age group, there's maybe like 40 kids, and she's been selected to be, you know. I don't even know if that's legit, though, because I've seen some of the girls on the rec teams, and some of them look pretty good. But whatever. At a certain point, she was, you know. I say this because, like I said, the way it works is you go then go play the other cities. And it's kind of neat because it kind of has like that high school element to it, right? Mm-hmm. Where you're like, oh, this is our city against this city, you know? Whereas when I was growing up in Arlington, Texas, it was so big that you just played other kids in Arlington.
Yeah.
Like there were 12, you know, fifth grade football teams just in Arlington. And you would just play in that league. Whereas here, you play the towns. But they went to play Greenwich.
Yeah.
And Greenwich is, I guess, the most affluent town in the area, right?
Yeah.
Maybe there's like a, like Cobb, maybe, like, but like Greenwich of any size, like that's, I think you probably got to have at least 1 million just to buy a house in Greenwich. It's like the South Lake.
Greenwich is the local villain, right? Everybody is rooting for Greenwich to lose all the time in Stanford.
I never got a whiff of this. So that's the weird thing, is because I would think that, right? I would think, you know what's weird is we live in a city that has a lot of working class, non-wealthy people in it. Like, genuinely. Like, the schools have community eligibility for free school lunch because there's so many poor people in the schools.
Yeah.
But the surrounding municipalities, New Canaan and Darien and Greenwich, and they're all, and Norwalk not so much, but the other ones are so wealthy.
Yeah.
And it's kind of weird, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, it's all done through like exclusionary zoning and all this kind of shit, you know?
Yeah.
Like, Stanford's the only place that builds apartments and stuff. So I've always kind of thought it's kind of weird. Like, we go, you know, like this, we go and play these very, very wealthy surrounding teams. But whatever, it's fine. Anyways, they went to play Greenwich, and they scored 8 goals on them in 15 minutes.
Okay.
So it was 8-0 in 15 minutes. These games are 60 minutes long. And it was just kind of, it was stunning. Like, I'd never seen anything like it. Like, they just, like, beat the shit out of these kids.
Yeah.
And this is ostensibly the top kids in Greenwich.
Yeah.
You know? And it was baffling. So, a couple things, right? So, I'd seen, you know, in youth sports, obviously, sometimes you run up the score and there's all these accommodations people might make. I know when I played baseball, they would have us bat left-handed if we were right-handed, or right-handed if we were left-handed, right? Mm-hmm. Like, once you went up like 15 runs, they were like, all right, guys, you know? But it still kind of looked pretty similar, and you're still trying to get outs and whatever. Apparently, in soccer, when you're at that point where you're just like, oh man, if we kept playing hard, we would probably score 20 goals today.
Yeah.
And win 20-0. And so you make some like mercy decision to like stop doing that. What they do is they just play keep away with the ball for the remaining 45 minutes, which they did, although they did also then score another goal. Oh, and then you also do weird gimmick stuff, like they pulled the goalie out and had her play in a position and she scored a goal. It was kind of goofy, but I thought that was a weird setup. Like, okay, so we don't want to humiliate these people, so what if we just play keep away with them for 45 minutes? What if we dribble and pass the ball all the way down the field, and then when we get to their goal, rather than shooting, we just turn around and dribble and pass it all the way back to our side of the field and just rinse and repeat like this for 45 minutes?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. It's pretty, that's kind of embarrassing in its own way. Anyways, the Stanford parents on the sideline.
Kill that.
What are you upset about? Oh. The Stanford parents on the sideline were not happy with this decision to stop scoring.
Yeah.
And that was interesting. You know, I didn't know that, you know, like this had never presented itself before. What's the response going to be, you know, sociologically to this question? I mean, I don't really have strong feelings. I don't, you know, I watch the games, but I don't really comment on the games or shout anything or whatever. You know, and that's not my game. I'm the quiet guy.
Yeah.
Watches the games, you know.
That's cool. Just discerning.
Yeah. Like I'm a scout. I'll write something in my little notepad.
Yeah.
So I didn't know how it was going, but I mean, I could see it either way. Like, I don't know, man, these like 8-year-old girls, you just want to like beat the shit out of them.
You know, yeah.
I think they get the point, you know, that maybe they need to go back to the drawing board on whatever the hell they're doing over there. But they wanted to keep the fucking foot to the pedal, the pedal to the metal, full throttle. And I was so curious about this. Like, oh my God, shit. Fucking serious about this 8-year-old soccer shit. And then I heard one of them say, they'll be okay because once they're done here, they'll get to go back to their mansions anyways. I was like, oh, fuck. doing some class war shit out here.
It's true, though. It's accurate.
I'd never heard anyone make any remarks about the relative affluence of these other cities, you know, even though it seems potentially palpable, you know?
Yeah.
Stanford also wears black, which is funny. You know, not in a racial sense, but like, you know, it's very like,
yes,
you know what I mean? Like, that's the color, the big evil, whatever. You know, in all the like youth sports movies,
yeah,
you know, and just, yeah, to come in. And I just thought, oh, that's interesting. Like, that's what they needed. They needed this moment to express their latent class antagonism. Like, it's, yeah, there. You know what I mean? It reminds me of sometimes you'll read these like reports where it's like, oh, these voters, they seem really motivated by this or that or whatever. But if you talk to them and you ask them the right things, there's a latent class consciousness that's present. They don't, you know, volunteer if you just ask them, like, what's your biggest issue or whatever. But like, if you can have a little conversation with them, you see, you know, that it's present. Class is there a little bit.
Yeah.
It's not fully, it's more there than maybe you think it is.
It's certainly an axis on which people still think.
Yeah, but it's like these judgment. People never have ever said anything about it.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, there it is, which means that they were thinking about it, though.
Yeah.
So it's there, but not expressed.
Yeah, that's what people just kind of think of Greenwich as this, like, local shitty villain town where...
But they didn't say anything before the game or any of the other teams that are similarly from affluent, you know. It took this 8-0 situation where everyone's just having a good time, triumphant, and then to see, oh, they're holding my kid back, you know? Like, this, there was something about that, being like, yeah, whoa, 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 wait a minute. You want my kid to kind of tip the hat and be gracious and not try hard and not score the goals they could score to help these guys?
Yeah.
These rich fuckers? They don't help us.
Yeah.
You know, like, in society. They take all our shit.
Yeah.
Now's the moment, you know? Let's go. It's like, I don't know. I was very intrigued by that.
You know, it's completely understandable.
It is understandable. I mean, I got it. I just, you know, it's very sad. I feel like, you know, I'd like our politics to be more class driven than it is. And then, you know, you get a sense of people like, it's just, you know, people don't think too much about class. And then you see little moments of it pop through and you're like, damn, it's kind of there. It's not totally absent, you know?
The only time I've been inside of a dwelling in Greenwich was when I went and interviewed Gretchen Carlson at her mansion.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty nice. It's a very nice house.
Yeah, yeah.
Look good on the outside, look like an art museum on the inside, frankly.
Yeah.
You know, you would have liked it. It was everything that was put in its proper place and nothing was on the counters or tabletops.
You know, I do like a clutter-free living environment, but I've managed 10 plus years without that, so, you know.
And you know what?
I can keep going like this.
Gretchen is not who everyone thinks she is. You know?
She's trans.
No, Matt.
No.
No.
I don't know what you're getting at.
She's just another example of someone who, you know, has a reputation as a Fox News babe or whatever, but is actually, you know, kind of a bit of a labor radical.
Yeah, I mean, she fucking won.
She passed a law.
She blew up Fox News, basically.
She blew up Fox News. She caused Roger Ailes to die.
Yeah, she killed that sumbitch.
Which he got owned so hard, he actually just fully died. And that was all thanks to Gretchen Carlson. And then she continued being so pissed about what happened at Fox that she, wrote a law or whatever, had help writing a law, but put it together.
She sat down and was like, what part of the U.S. code does this go in?
I mean, you say that, but she actually did look into what part of the U.S. code ruled arbitration and settled on the Federal Arbitration Act, right?
Yeah.
I mean, she knows shit. Actually, looked into those.
I'm just
details.
Kidding. I just know that the way this is actually drafted is you send a little note and they send it off to Ledge Counsel and all that shit.
Yeah. But she pushed it. She advocated on behalf of it, and she got it through. And so now arbitration can no longer apply to cases in which there's sexual abuse or allegations of sexual harassment.
Arbitration is a fucking cancer.
Despite employment agreements, it's not enforceable, even if it's in an employment agreement, if it involves sexual abuse.
You know the weird thing about arbitration?
Thanks to Gretchen.
Is, yeah, it's fun. That is interesting. And there's like a thing where they're going to add more stuff to the list, like over time.
Yeah.
Like,
good. Cool.
I mean,
get their ass, Gretchen.
Cool. It is cool. But it's also kind of funny where they're like, we support arbitration. And then people are like, what about this case? Like, nah, not that one. Like, what about this one? Nah. And like over time, it's like, you know, so many cases are not arbitrable anymore because. And then you're like, well, why not just get rid of the whole fucking thing?
Yeah.
And what kind of steams me about it, mm-hmm. honestly, is there is a kind of, what would you say? It's the same problem that occurs in discussions of the budgetary cost of welfare programs.
Yeah.
Where when you look into like why do we allow this kind of arbitration stuff, like why don't we just have everyone do everything in like the district court?
Yeah,
you know, like if you have a dispute about a contract or something, go to a district court. Mm-hmm. Like what's the point of the arbitration? And the main thing they'll say is that like it saves resources because we don't have to, you know, do all this in the courts.
Yeah.
You know, so you can do this arbitration thing instead.
Yeah.
Right? But that's like a pure fiction, right? Because if you're doing it in the arbitration, you're also using resources.
Yeah.
It's not technically like the court's resources, but it is the same thing.
Yeah.
So like if you could just take that same resource unit, whatever that takes, the judges, the court reporters, whatever, that do the arbitrating, and you could just put that in the district court.
Yeah.
And now it's the same resources. It doesn't say, you know what I mean? It's just putting different resources on different balance sheets.
Yeah.
But like aggregate judiciary resources are not reduced.
Yeah.
By putting stuff in private arbitration instead of the courts, you know, or to the extent that it is, it's because you've adopted slightly different processes for doing the arbitration. But you could adopt those processes in the courts as well. It's the idea that if you privatize something, that saves you money. It reminds me of the Medicare for All thing. Mm-hmm. Right, where people will say, we can't afford Medicare for All because look at how expensive it would be to have the government pay for all this insurance and stuff. And like, well, in the alternative, people are still paying for insurance.
Yeah.
Whether you pay it with a tax that goes to Medicare or you pay it with a premium that goes to Cigna, it's all the fucking same thing.
Yeah.
And in fact, if we could centralize it and have one public plan, the simplification would save money. It would be less aggregate spending on healthcare. But that's not how it goes. You pitch this and instead people are like, oh my God, it's such a massive expense. It's such a huge increase in costs and budget. And you're like, no, it's not. It's just moving the budget from Cigna and Aetna and into Medicare.
Yeah.
There's no change. It's just reorganizing. And so in a way, the main argument for arbitration is based on like accounting gimmicks.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, the real actual purpose of arbitration is something different than that, right?
Well, that's why people actually like it, mm-hmm. I think, on some level, right? Is that it tends to be beneficial to the employer or whatever,
right.
you know?
It's like a private court where the employer always wins.
Yeah, oftentimes, certainly. But that's not the like formal policy, you know, in the same way that like at the end of the day, one of the reason why Medicare for All, among others, one of the big reasons, you know, we can't do it is because we got to make sure the shareholders of Cigna and Aetna continue to get paid, you know?
Yeah.
And like, that's the reality there. Even though they don't add any value to the economy. But in the discourse, we have to contend with fake arguments.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And the fake argument is that somehow if we have a private judge that adjudicates this in like a fucking office, that's cheaper than having that same judge adjudicate it as a district court proceeding. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And it's sad. Sad situation.
It is sad. It's very sad. You hate to see it.
You got anything? We got time for one more thing or we can go? What do you want to do?
Oh, let's see. Gosh. You want me to read you some scary stories from one of Reddit's big scary story threads and you can tell me what you think?
One story, less than 3 minutes, please.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm not going to, you know, I'll give you the highlights. What is the scariest thing your spouse has ever said to you? Is one of the thread questions.
Oh boy, I can already predict some jokes there. Newlywed ass bullshit.
Are you already beaten down by this?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't even need to see it. I've already beat myself down. Top five responses. I'm sure they're so creative.
The top one is, look at all those snakes on the ceiling.
Oh, and that's not where I thought that was going.
In the middle of the night, he was actually fast asleep. There were no snakes.
Boring.
I mean, yeah, it's not very eventful.
How many upvotes did that get?
Hundreds.
Hundreds.
Yeah. I mean, it fit the criterion posed by the OP, which was something scary your spouse has said to you.
Okay.
You know, there was a harmless explanation.
Well, let's move along. More boggin.
Let's see. What's the scariest thing you've seen in the ocean that has a photographic proof?
I thought we were doing stories.
Oh.
These are questions?
Well, they're scary story threads.
Okay.
All right. Here, this one's good. What is the scariest thing that's ever happened to you? Matt, I want you to answer if you would be scared. Okay?
Okay.
I had a heart attack at 25 years old on New Year's Eve while I was at home on my own.
Yeah, death is scary. Next.
A robber got into my house when I was about 8.
Well, that's pretty scary, I guess.
Yeah, that's pretty scary.
I mean, you know, if you don't know if they're going to attack you physically.
All right. Riding a bike home from Walmart, getting hit by a truck.
Yes, death.
Death,
physical injury.
When I was 7, I was playing in my grandpa's front yard when a random car pulled up beside me and a young lady with an older man pulled out a rabbit in a cage and said, "Hey, you want to pet my cute rabbit?" So,
I mean, that's not scary in of itself. I guess if you're filling in that
intentions.
This is some kind of child abduction plot.
Got robbed at gunpoint and pistol whipped.
Again, yes. Death, bodily injury.
Got kidnapped by an ex-boyfriend who was weirdly obsessed with me when I was 16.
Yeah. I mean, these are all just crimes.
Yeah. Basically. Because the parameter set by the OP is that it has to be the scariest thing that's ever happened.
I thought we were
doing
paranormal shit or something.
Oh, okay. You want some of that? All right. I can make that happen.
I guess. I mean, I don't know. This would be like, what's the scariest thing? Oh, when someone shot me. Okay, yeah.
Reminds me of Brian Boitler, who just has the ultimate conversation ender.
Someone stabbed me once.
Just be like, I was shot. I can say whatever I want. Okay. What's the scariest story you know to be completely true? Number one, there's an extremely high number of child abusers that apply to be foster carers.
Yeah, I've seen that.
So that's one of the scariest things known to be true. That's fair. Guy I used to work with was murdered and dismembered by his crime partner, who was caught nonchalantly driving his vehicle around town.
Yeah, I've heard about killers driving the vehicles of their victims around. That's kind of baffling to me.
That's what happened in your sister's case.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
is that it? That's the ender? What's going on?
I just felt like, I felt like after that, I was like, Okay. Oh no, am I just dragging him through all these stories about crime?
No, I'm
when
just,
he's having PTSD.
I was confused about this content. People just listing the crimes that have occurred to them. Like, that's not, I thought scary Halloween, like there's some element of that. Not just, here's a near-death experience.
Yeah, or crimes they've heard of.
Yeah, I
know a crime.
My car like spun out once on the highway. That was pretty scary.
That sounds scary.
Yeah, could have died, you know.
Yeah, that's about, I mean, you know, at least you're heartened by the fact that people are operating on the honor system and are presenting mainly true things.
That's true, yeah. They're not,
because it's not really impossible shit. It's just like, I got hit by a car. It's like, damn, well, a lot of that goes on. But
yeah, is it just a true crime thread?
Yeah, basically. Sometimes there are more explicit true crime threads.
I figured something out today, actually.
Tell me.
I was trying to get to the psychological roots of the like anti-bigness, you know, those kinds of people, you know, which is not all.
Are you looking at Matt Stoller's tweet where he says, I come from the labor liberal tradition, you peasant worm?
No, I wasn't looking at that. But that it did, that stuff did, was part of this. I was just trying to figure out, you know, why are we so different, you know? And I was kind of like, you know what I've noticed is they're very narrative focused.
Mm.
You know what I mean? They love like this company and we fought them and won and we got a judgment against them and whatever. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like they love that.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I'm more of like a systems and numbers guy, you know? So I always look at it and I'm like, oh, okay, I mean, that's fine. But like, okay, you got this judgment against this company and they have to pay $40 million. And that's great. We've got a $26 trillion economy. I mean, like, I'm trying to move that Gini coefficient. I don't know if this is going to do it. But they're into that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I kind of kept going with it in my mind. I'm like, narrative, narrative. You know what they are? They're like true crime people. But for like this kind of crime. That's all they want to do is talk about true crime cases.
I mean, yeah. Well, they, you know, they see themselves as someone who an important trait is fighting for the little guy, right? So they've got to find protagonists and...
Yes, but that's right. But I don't need a person, or I can just deal with like an abstract protagonist, like the capitalist class or something. You know, right.
I don't think
it doesn't have to be like Apple or whatever, but for them it does.
Yeah,
and like they really get off on that element of it. Whereas to me, I'm like, I want to abstract out a little bit and try to think about systemically, you know. And so I think that just it's like, I think I got something here. It's like these are like true crime heads, and when you read the books, that's what it is. Or you read the America Prospect, that's what it is. They just love to tell you about a true white collar crime, if you will.
Right.
Or I guess they're not really white collar; they're like corporate crimes. Like, this company did fraud. Like, yeah, all right. I mean, I'm glad. Like that's why we have like law enforcement and stuff, you know. but that's it. That's like the extent of it.
Yeah, but it's like.
And they're like, what if we did better at stopping the crime? You're like, go for it. But
yeah,
that's not really going to move that Gini coefficient.
Yeah, it's not doing what it wants you to do. I think people, you know, politics is partly expressive, right? And people arrange their political views around what it says about them to have them, right? And I think that people who are really into the anti-bigness thing kind of are prone to thinking in these narratives like bullies versus, you know, sort of innocent victims, et cetera, because they see themselves as those who aid people who are weak and in trouble. But you, politics is not expressive for you, and it is not refracted through the prism of yourself in your mind. You are just imagining a perfect political system, and it doesn't really have a protagonist or anything like that. But I think a lot of people have trouble maintaining politics that aren't expressive at all.
Yeah, perhaps. I think there's something to be said about, you know, this sort of like, put the society out in front of you, and what if we could manipulate the system to make it go this way or that way, you know, like writing a program or something.
Yeah.
Which is just a different thing from like a specific conflict between this group of people and this particular bad guy. And our thing is I just want to talk about those. I want to write books about those event after event after event. And then it's like, okay, cool. I could even see that. You know, some people are into like vacuum cleaners. You know what I mean? Like it's whatever. Like shit, people are interested in, you know, shit like that.
Autistic on autistic crime here.
That's all I'm saying. You know, I like trains. You know, not on that level. Honestly, I'm not one of the, I know the model numbers and whatever, but they're interesting to me. But. Then you like to make a politics out of it.
Yeah, no.
And then like, and then they're trying to spin out. And then you're like, why does this not really hold together as like an agenda or make any sense? You know, like where you can like, you know, that's why you would call like populism. Because like populism means fucking nothing. You know what I mean? It's like an affect, right? Yeah. And then you're like, oh, I think there's the problem, right? Like trying to turn being like a true crime head into some kind of coherent politics is like doomed.
Yeah.
You can't really start from true crime and then build out.
Yeah.
You need to start with like some kind of systematic idea. But anyway, it's a little thought I had. Maybe I'll put that in the Times alongside my critique of the Kamala Harris Black Agenda.
Yeah, I bet people would love that. Did you see that Shai Davidi was kicked off of Columbia campus?
Ooh.
For apparently, let's see what he did.
Because he's Jewish, probably.
I'm sure that's what he'll say.
Do they even allow Jews on Columbia's campus anymore? I keep hearing that it's pretty bad up there.
Oh, well, we'll check in with our Columbia correspondent. This woman tweets, the Columbia business professor who has targeted me for months retweeted inappropriate comments about my body and claimed I was part of Hamas as we evacuated my family from Gaza, parentheses, we're Palestinian Christians, is now, don't get the wrong idea, is now banned from Columbia's campus for harassment. That's shy.
You know, it's one of those things, though, where is that pretext?
You think so?
You know?
I mean,
I don't know if that's the real reason they did it, you know?
You think so?
I'm not saying it's because they're anti-Semitic, but he's like...
I was like, where are you going with
he's
this,
like
man?
He's an annoying... oh, am I the one doing that?
Yes.
He's like he's just kind of been an annoying person.
Yeah, he's definitely, what would you call it, gadfly.
Yeah, and so now they're like, he finally stepped over the line because he went after this. And so now we have a basis to...
Yeah.
That's probably what happened. I mean, you know, it's hard. I don't really like that, I guess, in principle, even though he's such a jackass. But, you know, it is what it is. What can I do?
Yeah.
If he needs a labor lawyer.
Would you take his case?
I don't think he has a case, unfortunately. But, I mean, I'd look at it. See what...
He brought you one?
See, I mean, you know, I only do the NLRB cases. So, I don't know that, you know. He is talking about working conditions to some extent, but I don't know that he did it concertedly, you know? I'd say he's pretty ostentatious about being an individual. But
is there any NLRB-related case you absolutely wouldn't take based on the content of it? Like, it's not managerial?
I mean, at the moment now, I don't think I'm going to take any cases against a union.
Yeah.
I have helped someone file a duty of fair representation case against the union a long time ago.
Yeah.
But at present, I don't really see any value in that. So.
But suppose they fit all your criteria. You know, they have a ULP or whatever.
That's an interesting question.
Anyone whose case does not deserve, you know, effective assistance of counsel before the NLRB?
I mean, I have a pretty high bar, you know, because I don't like the employer getting off on, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, this is the thing I feel like, and we used to talk about this a lot, that I feel like people get too squishy about. Mm-hmm. But, like, even if I don't like a person or like what they're doing or think they're, like, piece of shit or whatever, that does not mean that I think... that they're supposed to be penalized in the employment relationship.
Yeah.
There's a question of what part of the society should be doing the penalizing, right? This comes up with sports a lot, where they want to expel or you know, suspend some player because of some bad thing they did off, you know, at home. Like they did domestic abuse or something.
Right.
And look, I don't want to, you know, poor domestic abuser or whatever. It's not that. But like there's a criminal system for that.
Yeah.
Like should go to jail. Right. Like we have a setup for that.
Right.
What does that have to do with whether they should work?
Yeah.
And what is your plan for them if they can't work? They do, like, we, you know, said this before, they get disability benefits.
Right.
Like, what, that's not what we're doing with work. Work is not a prize for good people. It's a thing we do to produce things. You know what I mean? It's like if the kids were misbehaving and I was like, you can't do your chores.
Yeah.
Like, what? Of course, we think of chores as punitive, but like, that's essentially the same structure. Right, be like, well, no, the reason you have to do your chores because you have to help produce in the household.
Yeah.
You have a job that has to get done and you do it. And now, well, no, but if they're a bad guy, then now they don't need to do a job. Like, what the fuck are you talking about? Yeah, it turns out we just need one less worker in the economy now.
Yeah.
One less whatever, you know, I don't know how it would all shake out, but one less garbage man, one less cashier. We don't need as much of that anymore.
Yeah.
Whatever they were producing, let's say they produce like $50,000 of output. That $50,000 of output, not because they were bad. They bad badly.
Yeah.
I feel like you're mixing things here. They don't need to be mixed, you know?
I believe at one time, you're right, we did used to discuss this all the time. I remember now.
Yeah, that was during the cancel.
During the canceling, and yeah. I think it was during COVID, partially.
Yeah, people were getting in trouble.
Yeah.
Because they were, you know, whatever. They might say shit on social media or yeah. whatever, like, you know. Or like race was a one, right? Where it'd be like, oh, they would catch someone saying something racist.
Yeah.
Not in the job, but just like.
A tweet or whatever.
Yeah. And then be like, ah, they should be fired. And be like, and do what with them? Like, if they're doing it in the workplace, well, now we have an issue that, you know, affects other workers and there's harassment and whatever, but...
Isn't it that, like, the people who are on Twitter doing the canceling of other people just feel like some jobs are actually special privileges?
But they right? don't, no, because they were getting people fired from, like, Home Depot.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, you know, I don't think that's like, they're not like, well, this is a teaching job. Okay, I got you there, right? Because they're going to have to deal with, you know, whatever, students of color. Okay, right? Maybe there are some jobs where it is a, as we would say, bona fide occupational qualification, a BFOQ,
mm-hmm.
that you... you know, have certain views and comport yourself a certain way, right? Certainly, the belief is that teachers shouldn't have OnlyFans, for example.
I had a big argument about that with someone. What do you think about that?
You know, I don't know. Don't know.
You know, I gotta say, go ahead. Like, do I personally think it's a good idea and would I recommend it? No.
Well, no, definitely not. But it's a question of...
I don't think it hurts the children in any way for you to separately have an adult website or adult occupation even. I don't think it would be a terrible thing if a teacher were, like, doing sex work at the same time as they were teaching, like, you know, again,
well, I think that's a different thing even though, because that's not public. I think the issue becomes about sort of like the distractive element of it. And you don't want to go too far with that, but I think that is the thing that becomes the BFOQ, right? It's like, well, it's going to be hard for you to do your job if this is something that the students are like aware of and like, you know, give you a hard time for and causes all kinds of like problems.
Yeah,
in the
but
school.
In every case where this has happened, it wasn't the students who figured it out. It was the parents.
No, I know. But that would be the argument, right? Is that in that sense? But I don't know. I'm not too. I don't like it. I like to be pretty solid on that and not. You know, just try to be, not give employers that kind of leeway.
Yeah.
About what you do in your free time.
Agreed.
And, you know, I think it's a bit of a cop out to be like, well, our customers, in this case, our students, it's like, well, you know, they need to stop being, you know, that's on them in a way.
Right. Or the schools just need to be open about the fact that they're trying to enforce a kind of moral discipline. And then
well, certainly, like
I'm all ears if you have
religious
moral
institutions are able to do stuff like that, but I don't, you know, that's where education gets a little tricky because it can be tied up like that. But you know, I don't think in general, right? That's the issue. So I don't think in general, right? We want to say that employers, even private employers, can be like, well, we only hire people with certain kinds of morality or whatever.
That's how the church fires gay teachers.
Yes. So for religious reasons, there's like exceptions and all kinds of shit for that. But outside of that context, you know, I think it's tough. But yeah, I mean, I'm not a fan of that. Like I think I said before, like a job is like using the bathroom.
That's what you said. That was your famous quote.
You like that?
I have used it many more times myself, the bathroom and that quote.
The job is, yeah, job's like using a bathroom. Like, you don't just...
Everybody needs access to it. It's not a special reward.
Yeah. We don't be like, ah, he's racist. He can't take a shit. Like, well, what's he going to do?
I read about this case. It was on People.com's crime vertical, which is a great resource for me that I use often in my digest of daily news. Some lady, it said she abused her boyfriend so badly, he lost 60 pounds in 2 months. And I was very curious to hear that because I'd never heard numbers like that recorded before. And
damn, if you didn't eat anything at all for 2 months, maybe.
Yeah. And then he also said she wouldn't let him poop in the house. He had to like leave and go to a supermarket or something. Which I found particularly insane.
Was he pooping? I mean, he wasn't eating anything.
I mean, I found that to be I never heard that one before.
Yeah, I don't think this probably happened.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe the pooping.
It said it all happened in the UK, so that's sus right off the bat.
Yeah, I don't think, you know.
We can't really know anything about what goes on in the UK, you know, because all their shit comes to us filtered through the CIA.
I don't know. There's a lot of people there that...
All right, I'm joking.
Oh. All right, well, it's getting pretty late. I need to go to bed.
All right.
All right. Adios, my phone.